Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Our topic tonight is children, investment and tax considerations for them and you. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Kyle is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. Again, 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live on air, you can give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio to me. Email is also available through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Children and investments. So what I think I'm going to try to cover tonight, and it's kind of maybe a little bit too much, and maybe, you know, it's a little confusing. We're in a transition period. I've got to tell you, the tax laws have been changing so much, and the stimulus has changed some of what we, you know, generally might know. Our general knowledge has changed, that it's hard to keep up with it. It really is. I feel like my head is spinning sometimes when I'm looking at some of these things. And then, of course, you know, I think, oh gosh, I'm a professional. I should know some of these, you know, I should know these things. But I'm telling you, back in the day, you know, I've talked with other accountants and they didn't change anything for inflation. There were no inflation adjustments. All the numbers stayed the same for years. Then they started doing inflation adjustments to different numbers that we have, different thresholds, different contributions, different deductions, and all kinds of stuff. Then it makes it a little harder to keep up with it. Well, then, now, boy, I mean, they're changing laws, they're changing stimulus payments, like on the fly. Very difficult to keep up with. So I thought tonight I would just kind of give some parameters or some guidelines around some things to consider when we have children. And some might apply, some might not apply. Just thought I'd throw some things out. I want to kind of touch on the cost of having a child. I looked this up and it was actually some information based on an old study. But since we haven't had much inflation recently, maybe the numbers would still be relevant. So I'm going to refer to that a bit. Then touch on what happens from a tax perspective, some changes that we've had recently and things to be aware of. Touch on a little bit on schooling and education. Some of these topics could be entire shows themselves, so I'm really kind of giving a big picture. And then a little bit on estate planning if we still have time, or even risk management. Some of these things, you know, I would say apply just in any kind of changes in your life anyway, about being aware of your own situation and planning whatever goals you might have. So when we're talking about children, we think, well, it could be your goal to have a family, to have children, and what does that mean? And I, from the perspective of being proactive, what could you do to be ready for that? And sometimes you're still not ready. So cost of living, cost of having a child, this was from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, believe it or not, on USDA.gov. And they recently, well, it's not really recent, they issued a report, Expenditures on Children by Families, and it was 2015, Expenditure on Children by Families. And the report was also known as The Cost of Raising a Child. They had been tracking the cost of raising a child since 1960, and the analysis examined expenses by age of child, household income, budgetary component, and region of the country. And obviously, I'm not going to go through the whole report, just some highlights of it. But based on that data for 2015, a family would spend approximately, I'm going to round, $13,000 annually per child in a middle-income family. So they considered middle-income from $59,000 to $107,000. Two-child married couple family, middle income, that was a two-child married couple family, mid-range, 59 to 200, would spend about $13,000 a year. Middle income married couple parents of a child born in 2015 may expect to spend $233,000, and it was, with inflation factors at that time, to be about $284,000 for food, shelter, and other necessities to raise a child through age 17, and it does not include the cost of education. Number one, raising a child through the age of 17, quite often that goes longer than that, and many parents like to provide some support to their children if they're going to pursue a college education. Not always, but sometimes. I paid for my own college education, but, you know, we helped out our children with their college education. So when people have the means to do so, quite often they may do that. So raising a child through age 17 are where these numbers are coming from. And that could really sound a little scary. They talked about where the money goes and really indicated that a lot of it was for housing. Housing accounts for the largest share at 29% of total child rearing costs. Now, not looking at the study, we would have, you know, housing costs anyway. So I think this must be, you know, in addition to that, like a bigger house, that type of thing is my guess. Food was the second cost, 18%. And child care and education for those with that expense was third at 16%. They said the expenses vary depending on the age of the child. Basically, you know, the big takeaway and just common sense would tell you that if you do have children, they're going to cost you a lot of money. And some people weigh the pros and cons of that. Some people might decide they don't want children for that very reason. They want to maintain their independence and be able to live the life that they choose to. Some people may not have that as a choice and just don't have children, but it's something to consider. So one of the things I like to, in hindsight, and even when my husband and I were even starting out early on, we talked about kind of living beneath our means, meaning when you go to buy a house, if you maybe aren't even married yet, you're thinking about getting married, that's the direction you want to go. Maybe at some point you might want to have a family. You don't want to maybe max out the cost of your home. You might not want to max out your ability to buy a car. In kind of preparation for things. And if for some reason it doesn't work out that you have children, then you will just have a more solid financial pot to meet other goals that you may have. I have a client who doesn't have children, and he has helped support the college education of about 10 nieces and nephews. And it's really, really important to him, and it's wonderful, and he's very close with his family. So sometimes it's not just for your own children. It could be, you know, helping to support other children, related or non-related. It could be you're very close with one of your best friends, and it could be their children. So just understand the cost of having a child if you have one, and if you don't and you want to help, you know, support the nieces and nephews or friends' children, that's always an option as well, because it is very costly. And if you do proceed on the idea of having a family, if you haven't had children yet, think about what you're doing when you're buying that house, when you're buying that car, when you're spending that kind of money, because you want to leave yourself room. One of the things my husband and I did when we moved, I had worked part-time, and I've mentioned this on the show before, when we decided to move into a bigger home with our three children, we could have bought a more expensive home based on our income, but we chose not to, so that we would always have the option of, you know, me kind of not working as much. That didn't work very long. I work all the time now. But it's nice to have that flexibility, that you're not tied into, you know, having to work so much if you then eventually want to have a family, with a little bit of flexibility, either in staying home with them or, you know, having part-time work or something like that. So just understand the cost of having children. When we come back from this first break, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the tax implications of having children and some changes that we're seeing right now. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY's Board Member of the Month for July is Cheryl Hotney. Cheryl is one of the founding members of the Lehigh Valley Community Broadcasters Association, the nonprofit organization that started and operates WDIY. She was elected to the Board of Directors in 2017 and is currently Board President. Thanks for your dedication to WDIY and public radio, Cheryl. Read more about WDIY's Board of Directors at our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. You can listen live online at wdiy.org, and you can also listen via the WDIY app. And there's also a two-week archive on the app, and a pretty extensive archive on WDIY.org, and that's under Public Affairs Programming. So, okay, so we are talking. Oh, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And it can be off topic as well. It doesn't have to be about the subject tonight. I just fill in with topics each week, waiting for listeners' questions, because that is my favorite thing. If you, again, have questions, 610-758-8810 or through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. All right, so let's talk about the tax perspective for a minute. And so I think I will talk about the child care credit briefly, only because that, you know, when I Googled the child care credit, the child care credit is different than the child tax credit. The child tax credit has a lot of layers to it, and that's a little bit more complicated. So I thought I would first talk about the child care credit. And this is from Kiplinger. And the child care credit was expanded for 2021. It says up to $8,000 available. And it says for this year only, so far, families with young children can get a bigger tax credit for child care expenses, and more families will qualify for the credit. And the they mention about the child tax credits, that is getting all the attention. When I Google child care credit, what comes up is child tax credit over and over and over again. I wanted to get a little bit more background on this expanded child care credit. So I think it's really important to kind of review it. So the child, and it's called the Child Independent Care Credit. It's from Form 2441 is what people complete to get that. And in 2020, There's different percentages, and if you have a flexible spending account, you're reimbursing yourself through the flexible spending account for those child care credits, but the amount that you could put in the flexible spending account is capped, and the IRS lets us take a little bit more from on the Form 2441. It's typically up to $3,000 of expenses, but not for more than two children. So if you have two children or more, it was capped at $6,000 of a credit, and it's based on your income, and there's different, you know, percentages, and it's complicated, so I'm not going to get into that. But they have extended it to, or expanded it to be $8,000. So that is something that could be really big. I think there's going to be income limits on that. They say instead of the $3,000 in expenses for one child and $6,000 for two or more, the American Rescue Plan Act allows the credit for up to $8,000 in expenses for one child and $16,000 for multiple kids. That is a huge, huge, huge difference in credits. And it says when combined with the 50% maximum credit percentage, that puts the highest credit amount available for this tax year at $4,000 if you have just one child and $8,000 for two. So I don't know exactly what that meant, some kind of limitation. So I won't go into that because that makes it very hard to follow the story here. So there are adjusted gross income limitations, and just be aware of that. And I'm not sure if the tax planning software has even caught up with all of these changes that are happening like moment by moment. You may want to do a little tax planning for yourself if you think you might be eligible for the child care credit for one or two kids, depending on your income and depending on if you're doing flexible spending account. That could be a very big credit, all right? So normally there was a dollar limit of $3,000 or $6,000 for two children or more. It's getting expanded to $8,000 up to $16,000 for more than for two or more kids. And we think it's just temporary so far. They could expand that a little bit more. All right. And that child and dependent care credit is not to be confused with the child tax credit. Another thing to keep in mind that some people don't know is if one of the parents, both parents technically have to work in order to qualify for that child tax or dependent care credit or child care credit, but it can, there's other exceptions to that, and it could be that one of the parents may be disabled, or if one of the parents is looking for a job. So keep that in mind. There may be exceptions that you may not have realized would qualify. Now, be careful on what you call a care provider, though, because in order to take the child care credit, you child or dependent care credit, you do have to provide the tax information for the person you're paying those expenses. Okay, so if you're paying mom to come over $500 a week and mom doesn't, you're not reporting that, which you're, you know, supposed to, then that's a problem. You do have to report who you're paying those monies to on your tax return, because obviously the IRS could match that up and look for the income on the other side. But that's Form 2441. If you have like a nanny or someone in your house, there's household employer information that you may have to complete, a Schedule H and withhold certain taxes for them. There are people who have certain nannies that are from foreign countries, and there's certain exemptions for paying the payroll taxes on them. That's also kind of complicated, so I'm not going to get into that. But these are the little oddball things that sometimes you have to be a little bit aware of to see if your circumstances might apply when you otherwise would have thought maybe they wouldn't. All right. So some tax credits for kids. What we used to have was an exemption for children and a child tax credit. Then the exemption went away and they raised the child tax credit. And now they've done it again, though it I don't know if the child tax credit is going to be temporary. We're going to talk about that when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's new phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY.org, WDIY 88.1 on your radio, and WDIY on the app. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and it doesn't have to be on this topic either if you have other questions that you have. Frankly, I feel like this is a moving target, this topic, and I realize as I think it through myself, I'm not sure I have it quite down yet because there are some things that are still in the works. So, for example, this child tax credit under the American Rescue Plan, it did increase the child tax credit from $2,000 per child to $3,000 per child for children over the age of 6, and from $2,000 to $3,600 for children under the age of 6, and raised the age limit from 16 to 17. This is just enough to make your head spin. I mean, it is crazy when I think that individuals have a hard enough time trying to understand taxes. Believe me, the CPAs are struggling with it now, too, these days. Luckily, we have software that will help us figure it all out. But as we're going along here, it can get pretty complicated. So I'll talk about the rest of the child tax credit in just a minute because we have a caller on line one. We have Dave from Nazareth. Hi, Dave. Can you hear me?
Hi, Lori. Yeah, I can hear you.
Great. How can I help you?
Yeah, my question relates to my granddaughter, who's 9 years old, received a check from the IRS about 2 weeks ago, and it's labeled economic relief payment for $1,400. And she's claimed as a dependent on her parents' return, but we have no idea why she would be getting a payment from the IRS, and kind of wondering how to proceed with it since, you know, we think it's either an heir or maybe another issue.
Yeah, it could be another issue. I think the stimulus payment, my recollection experience with clients has been there is a stimulus payment for dependent children, but it's usually coming to the parents. And
yep.
You're saying that the check was written to her.
Yes.
Yeah, that I'd have to probably search to see if there's something there. It could be a flag that something is amiss.
Yeah, that's what I was concerned about.
Yeah, I would probably check on that. I don't know if I would. It doesn't happen that her name is the same as maybe a grandma or an aunt or anything, is it?
No.
Okay. You might want to write a letter or have your daughter write a letter to the IRS. The trouble with calling the IRS right now is you almost can't get through.
Yeah.
And I just had not heard this happening yet. So this is new to me, and I could probably put it on my PICPA listserv where we all ask questions of each other to see if anyone else has had it. If you wanted to, you know, shoot me an email at work, I could, you know, get back to you on that. But I have not heard this. I've heard it come to the parents, not to the child like that. So it might be might be worth checking out. And you're sure she didn't file a tax return, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I help him with his preparation of his tax return, so I'm familiar with it. So the parents filed a return. She's one of three dependents, and just had no idea why she would get that payment unless there's another issue.
Yeah. Let me see if I can see something. Let me see if I can see something quickly here. I'm not seeing anything that says, I can't look it up fast enough, Dave, sure. But I think it was a good question. I think it's really smart of you to think that through. Yeah, sounds a little odd to me, but I'm not sure I would cash the check yet.
Oh, yeah, he's aware, my son, that mm-hmm. They don't plan to cash the check. It's just...
Did they get the stimulus for the kids in theirs?
No, they didn't qualify because of their income.
Okay.
For the stimulus. So,
interesting is I've been hearing, and this is really troubling to me as a CPA. I've had a number of people tell me that their accountants have told them, the parents, to file a return for their child and have the child claim themselves. So they're telling the parents, don't claim your kid. They can file their own tax return and qualify for a stimulus payment. And one of the people was my brother, and he called me and he asked me about this. He said, Lori, this seems a little strange. And I said, well, your son's your dependent, right? He said, yes. I said, does your son provide more than half of his own support? He said, no, we provide more than half of his support. I said, then he can't file a return. And I'm hearing, and he said, well, why would my accountant say that? And I said, well, does your accountant sign your son's tax return? He said, no. I said, well, that's why your accountant doesn't care what your son does.
Yeah.
So my brother was going to go tell the accountant to amend their return to claim their son, and he would not, he wasn't going to file that way. So unless by accident, if your granddaughter might have had $10 of interest or something like that, I think it could be something else amiss. So you might want to check on that for sure.
Okay.
Right. Good luck with that. And I love this. I love when people call in and tell me these kinds of things, because then if someone else has it, I'm more aware of it and we can kind of be in front of it. So if you think of it next week and you get any kind of response, or if I find out anything, I will make sure I mention it next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. And I'll advise them to go ahead and write the letter to the IRS because he's reluctant to spend hours on the phone waiting to get through to the IRS.
You know what else he could try is if he went online, there might be a tool online. I know in the past there was a tool online to check on stimulus payments if they put his daughter's Social Security number in there, if something would come up.
Oh, okay.
And I think there's a new, and I'm not as familiar with this because it's kind of newer, where people can set up an account with the IRS and communicate that way. And haven't done it yet and haven't had a client who's done it, but I'm aware that the IRS is trying to find ways to communicate with individual taxpayers rather than, I think, the phone calls. Just like Social Security set up.
Okay.
It's called My Account now. I think the IRS is trying to do something similar. So there might be a way to kind of check on it that way, too.
Okay.
All right? Okay, all right. Dave, good luck.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. That was an interesting story. And I may have mentioned this on a prior show. My office got an alert that someone had filed for unemployment on my Social Security number. So these things do happen. People are getting more and more sophisticated on how they're, kind of obtaining that information. So you do have to be diligent and careful out there. Same thing with like cybersecurity and your emails, and don't click on links that look familiar or suspicious. And I was just talking with someone about that today. So we are talking about children and investment and tax considerations. And we were looking at the child tax credit, which is going from $2,000 per child to $3,000 per child for children over the age of six, and from $2,000 to $3,600 for children under the age of six, and raise the age limit from 16 to 17. But folks, before we get all excited about that, There are some phase outs on that. Not everybody's getting that, and it doesn't apply to all. So we will talk about the phase outs when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shawnee Gray. It is now 6:30 and 84 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be low 67. Thursday is going to be heavy rain, high 81. Thursday night is going to be low 66. Friday is going to be sunny, high 83. Friday night, low 54. And for your Saturday, it's going to be high 80 and sunny. Saturday night, low 58. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back to the show. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And we are talking about the child tax credit and the increase on that. But there are phase outs on that. So, and they also think, I'll talk about the advance in a minute. So the phase outs are for the extra amount. So the regular child tax credit that we've been familiar with since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, back before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the child tax credit was $1,000. Then we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. They raised the child tax credit to $2,000 and took away the personal exemption. All right. So that was $2,000 per child until they're 17, so up to age 16. Then with the American Rescue Plan, they have increased, with the child tax credit going up to $2,000, they also raised the income on that. And just say married, filing, joint, it was about $400,000, some pretty big numbers, and $200,000 for other filers. So pretty big numbers, more and more people qualified for that child tax credit. Then as part of the American Rescue Plan, they wanted to get more money in the pockets of families, so they increased the child tax credit for 2021 to $3,000 a child, $3,600 as I mentioned. There is a phase out. So the phase out is for the extra, there's two phase outs. The first phase out is for the extra amount, the increase in the payment. So normal credit $2,000, increased credit to $3,000, or normal $2,000, increased to $3,600 for children under the age of 6. That increase is phased out if the joint income is greater than $150,000 and the head of household income, $112,500, and other filing status is $75,000. So you're not going to get the increase in the child tax credit if you're over those phase outs. All right. Then the standard phase out. So if you're over those income limits, then you still would be eligible for the regular child tax credit. But if you go over the $400,000 married, filing, joint, and the $200,000 for other filers, then you don't get that child tax credit at all. They also increase the age to 17. So now if you have a 17-year-old, you're going to get this credit. That's also big. That's pretty big, especially when those kids might be heading off to college immediately, you know, set aside that money for the education. Now, here's the other part that's changing is that they increase these credits, and then they've just rolled out something called the advanced child tax credit, that they're advancing part of the credit to people automatically. So all of a sudden, you could be getting checks in your bank account. You don't know what they're for. If you have children, it could be part of this advanced child tax credit. Just be aware, though, that if your income now for 2021 is going to be over these thresholds, you may not actually be entitled to that advance credit. And when you go to file your tax return next year, if your income's too high, you may have to pay that back. Be careful not to get surprised by that. The IRS did say there's an opt-out option. You can opt out of the advance credit, and then that way, if your income's, you know, stays in the ranges, you'll still get the credit on your 2021 tax return. So you it doesn't mean you lose it. It just means you have to calculate it when you do your 2021 tax return. So you can opt out of it. Now, I've had people call me and say, I haven't received my child tax credit. Why? Well, maybe you filed your tax return late. Maybe you have a custody agreement with an ex-spouse or a former spouse or partner, and you take turns claiming the child tax credit because you have some kind of agreement with that. That could mess that advance credit up. There's supposed to be a tool on the IRS's website for this child tax credit, and just was it earlier this week or last week? I don't think that tool was there yet. And I didn't check yet today, but that credit or that tool was not yet available. So it's just a little hairy out there right now, I think. Just a little bit confusing. So you need to be aware of a couple things. One, to recap what we've kind of talked about, having children can cost money, and it could cost a lot of money. So plan accordingly if you have that as a goal to have children in your future, to kind of manage your saving earlier. And then we talked about what happens with child care credits or dependent care credits and qualifying for those. And for 2021, they're increasing them significantly. And remember, I'm saying child care credit, child tax credit. Credits are huge. We're not talking about deductions. We're talking about dollar for dollar offset against your taxes. It could be a lot of money, folks. And just be careful about spending it too quickly if it's the child tax credit, because you may have to pay some of it back if your income's over the thresholds and they gave you too much if you got an advance credit. Otherwise, some of the things you might want to think about for 2021, if you go do your tax planning, if you think you might be in a phase out range and maybe you're not contributing to your 401k the way you want to, because maybe you didn't have, you know, as much cash flow as you were hoping. Well, these child tax credits might help you put away a little bit more into your retirement account and thereby qualifying for them. Because if you put money into your retirement account on a pre-tax basis and you lower your W-2 income on your tax return, then you may qualify for more of these credits that you otherwise would not have. So a lot, you know, it's really something to pay attention to, because sometimes it's just a matter of dollars over these thresholds. Okay. Barbara called in from Emmaus. She's not online. It's off air. What happens when a couple is divorced and the court has decided what the child support is? Does that just help the primary caregiver? So Barbara, let me see if I can try to understand your question. What happens when a couple is divorced? The court has decided what the child support is. Okay, so that makes sense. You get divorced, you have children, and one spouse may be the higher earner and has to pay child support to the custodial parent. So there's a custodial parent, and you're getting child support to help raise that child. Then you ask, does that just help the primary caregiver? And I'm thinking the custodial parent. So the child support isn't a tax reported item. The custodial parent generally claims the child, unless, as I mentioned earlier, there are circumstances where the couple together can make a decision to take turns claiming the child. Or sometimes I've had clients who have two children and one will take one and the other will take the other. And that's an agreement that you can come to. The IRS doesn't get involved necessarily in those kinds of tiebreaker rules unless you're arguing or fighting about it. We've got one person trying to file a tax return and claim the kid when they really shouldn't be claiming it, because it tends to fall to the custodial parent. So I don't know if that's where you're going with that, Barb. If you get support from a ex-spouse and you are the primary caregiver, you are the custodial parent, and you have, let's say, you're claiming your child as a dependent, then you're the one who's eligible for the child tax credit, and the child support doesn't come into play at all. You're the one who gets entitled to the child tax credit. And if you're paying child care expenses, you personally are paying child care expenses, then you also otherwise qualify with the income and thresholds and, you know, the proper reporting and all that, then you would also get the child care credit. All right. So I hope that helps. I hope that helped answer your question. If not, you can send a question to me through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'll be happy to expound upon that if that didn't answer it. All right? So I hope that helped. Thank you for calling, Barbara. So a number of things with children, if you proceed that direction, beware of cost, be aware of credits that may be available to you, tax credits, child care credits, child tax credits. So what else can we think about here with children? As they grow, remember we've seen the expanded child tax credit to age 17. We still might have children who are dependents beyond that, typically maybe even through college if they continue to go to college. So we have a question about who's dependent. Remember earlier someone we were talking and I said, does the child provide more than half of their own support? Well, if you have a college student and up through age 24, if they're still in college and you're providing more than half their support, you can still claim them as a dependent on the tax return. You're not going to get these huge child tax credits that we just talked about, but you could get a $500 tax credit under today's laws for that dependent child, except for income limitations. But that dependent child still may work and have earnings and have a W-2 and may have to file a tax return. And if they just have earnings and W-2 income, you're probably pretty good. If, let's say, they're working at the bookstore at the college and they make $3,000, they probably didn't withhold any taxes, but they still would probably have to file a state return. And in Pennsylvania, we have lots of local returns. If they're working at the local grocery store and they make $3,000 or $4,000, the employer may have withheld some federal income taxes. So that's why you're filing the return, to get the federal withholding back, because there is a standard deduction for up to the wages for children, dependent people who are working. And you could, chances, you know, if they're making less than that allowed standard deduction amount, they could get their federal withholdings back. Okay, so far so good. If you try to get clever and think, I'm going to save money on my own taxes and take some of my investments and put it in my kids' name because they're in a low tax bracket or they don't pay any income tax, then you may be subject to something called the kiddie tax. And the kiddie tax is basically income over certain thresholds that your child may have that is unearned income. So remember, I said if they have earned income, there is a bit of a standard deduction for those dependent kids, depending on, you know, how much W-2 income they have. But if they have other kinds of investment income and they're over a certain threshold, then that income will get taxed at your tax rate. So be careful on trying to get too clever. And typically, those accounts are opened in a designation they call Uniform Trust for Minors Act, UTMA accounts. Occasionally, I've seen grandparents open accounts like this for the grandchild. The grandchild doesn't have any idea. You know, 15 years later, the grandparents are getting the 1099s for the grandchild because they put their address on them. The grandparents, the custodian in that circumstance. And, you know, we've got a interest or dividend statement with $100 on it. And in Pennsylvania, we know we have to file a tax return if the income's $35 or more. Well, now we've got a tax return that has to be filed for that grandchild, and that grandchild might not even know they have that tax return. And depending on what other income that they have, and the grandparent might not know that the kid has a bunch of other income, they could be subject to a kiddie tax if it's over certain thresholds. And those thresholds, you know, they do give you a little wiggle room, but you can't have too much income over certain thresholds. Okay, folks, we are at the last break. Show's gone very fast for me. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also at WDIY.org, and also available on the WDIY app. We are talking about children, investment, and tax considerations for them and you. Briefly, again, I just want to mention the form. Oh, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. Tax for certain children who have unearned income, that's form 8615, and it's to figure the child's tax on unearned income over $2,200 if the child's under age 18. And, you know, just be aware that that could be a red flag. We have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori. I have a question, but I also have to say that, you know, the way the laws are changing, it just absolutely will make your head spin.
It does, and thank you for recognizing my head is spinning tonight. Yeah, I'm already tired, God. Carolyn, and then trying to keep track of tax laws is incredible.
Well, kudos to you to be able to do that. As I know, this year we filed, and then they changed the rules after we filed,
right.
And all of a sudden we had the money in our checking account that the IRS gave back to us. I think it was unemployment compensation.
There was a change in unemployment, so for people who had already filed and declared all of their unemployment income and paid whatever tax, you know, that factored in, mid-tax season, they changed it and gave an exemption of $10,200. And then the question was, do people have to amend? Do people have to, you know, refile? What are we going to do? And the IRS said, no, put the brakes on. We're going to take care of it. And it looks and sounds like they did take care of it. So they would give you that exemption if you qualified for it. Yeah. It's been crazy.
The speed of the change has been.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So kudos to you, and every time I think, oh, we have a pretty basic financial situation, maybe I'll try and do it myself, I chicken out, and this is just exactly why. So thank you for that. But I have a quick question about 529 plan, saving for college. Has that changed at all, or is that still...
No, it's the same. I haven't seen any changes on that, but it's a good point to always bring this up because people need to be reminded, you know, sometimes information isn't always on everyone's radar because it may not affect them at that time. 2-3 years passed, and now their situations have changed, and they may not have it on their radar that there is something available called a college education savings account. We call them 529 accounts. And while nothing has changed, it's really important for people in Pennsylvania to know that you can make a contribution to a 529 account for anybody. Carolyn, you could make a 529 contribution to an education account for me. And it's $15,000, and you simply have to have my Social Security number, which, you know, most people would say, well, if you're going to give me $15,000, why not? But it doesn't have to be $15,000, and it doesn't have to be less than $15,000, and it can actually be more than $15,000. The reason I'm saying $15,000, particularly to people in Pennsylvania, is that there is an annual exclusion amount the federal government gives everyone to say, if you make a gift to any one person of $15,000 or less, you don't have to do any special reporting with the IRS. If we do more than that, the IRS wants to know, because the IRS gives us a lifetime gift amount. And today, that lifetime gift amount is $11.7 million. If we start giving away $1 million into a 529 account, and that would be too much. That's not allowed. We can't do that much. But let's say $200,000 I wanted to put into a 529 today. I could do that, but then I'm over that $15,000 exemption. I'd have to file a gift tax return to let the IRS know I'm starting to eat into my lifetime exemption. But Pennsylvania doesn't care who we're giving it to, as long as we have the ID number and the name of the person we're giving it to. So I could do it for you. I could do it for my children. I could do it for my grandchildren. I don't have any yet, but I could do it for nieces, nephews, friends, neighbors, you know, whomever. Sometimes people will even say, in lieu of giving a birthday gift, make a contribution to my child's 529 account. So the 529 account, great college savings vehicle. It gives us a deduction for Pennsylvania residents. Other states also sometimes will have a deduction. New York has a deduction, but it has to be to a New York plan. Virginia has a deduction, but it has to be to a Virginia plan. Pennsylvania doesn't care what plan it is. We can make a contribution to a Nevada plan or an Ohio plan. And what plan would someone use? Well, you just go look for a really good plan that meets your investment criteria that you might have. So I hope that answered your question, Carolyn. No, nothing has changed. It's a great deduction. And any savings in that account, if invested, grow income tax-free. And as long as it's used for qualified education expenses, there's no tax consequences to it. And then there's certain exceptions to if you don't use it for qualified education expenses, there are certain exceptions to penalties on using it for something other than that. But it's a great vehicle. And there is something that they did change, which was a couple years ago, though, that you can use $10,000 of the 529 toward a student loan. That's a lifetime amount, meaning you can't do it every year. It's $10,000 towards student loans. And you could also now pay elementary and secondary education private tuition. So if someone's in a school that costs $3,000, you can use the 529 for that. If it's $15,000, you can only do 10. So you can use 529s for private elementary and secondary education and loans, but capped on both of those. Okay?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Simple question, but it gets very complicated.
Sure does.
So thank you for calling. It's great hearing your voice.
Okay.
Have a good night. Bye bye. It's funny. I've always said I like details, and the devil's in the details, and pay attention to the details. And to me, quite often, it's the details that really can make the difference in someone's planning life. You know, not only being proactive, which I reiterate at the end of every show, being proactive, not reactive, because when you're proactive, you have a lot more options and choices rather than reactive. That limits your options and choices. So proactive. But also just kind of being aware and you know, paying attention to all of these things. It's the details that sometimes make a real difference in people reaching their financial goals. So thank you for that question, Carolyn. I appreciate all the listeners tonight who have called in. It's been really great. It really helps me get through the show and gets my energy up as well. So we talked about the KIDI tax. Your child may have to file a tax return. If their unearned income is over $2,200, then they may have to pay at your tax rates. And then, you know what's interesting to me, and this is something that really perplexes me, we're all about privacy, correct? We're all about privacy with the IRS. The Form 40, the 8615, it's calculating the tax rate on the child's income based on the parent's income. Does the child sign that tax return, or does the parent sign that tax return for the child? Let's say the child's 16. They're having to file a form that shows the calculation of the parent's income to tax the child's income at their rate. The parents might not want the kids to know that income. That form has perplexed me. I think it's, you know, kind of exposing the parents' private information to the child if the child's looking at that tax return. So you better be aware of that if you're in that situation with your children, and maybe you go to a tax preparer and they prepare the returns for your children. Look to see who's signing or what page they're signing. And you know, most returns are filed electronically, so you don't really need to, you know, look at that part for your child. I mean, your child doesn't need to necessarily look at that part because it's electronically filed, but just be aware of that. What else are we going to try to talk about tonight? So helping your children develop good financial skills and tools. Next week, I'm going to talk about government websites. And the reason I decided to do that, frequent listeners know I like government websites because there's a lot of work and research that goes in behind some of these websites and some of the consumer-related information that's available there. Like the IRS website has so much information. It does get a little cumbersome, and sometimes it's not up to date always. Like the child care credit isn't up to date yet. There's a lot of other websites as well. So I thought next week I'd do that. I do that from time to time. But there are some websites out there that can help with things like this. And tonight I thought I would mention their website is called consumerfinance.gov, consumerfinance.gov/consumer-tools/money-as-you-grow/talking-about-financial-decisions. So, you know, it can get a little complicated, but basically consumerfinance.gov, and then usually there's a search engine and you can type in family talks. But they talked about having common family events that can lead to money talks with your children. And I got to tell you, I think it's really important to do this even as a couple. I have suggested on shows in the past, if you're starting a new relationship, I used to talk about the stages where we have, I call it the testing stage, nesting stage, investing, resting, and divesting stages. And the initial one, the testing stage, I said the testing stage is when you're trying things on, like you're going to college, you're trying relationships, you're seeing what's working for you, the testing stage. The testing stage is a good time to test out a partner and have some conversations around financial matters and your philosophy around them to see if you would be a good match, because quite often financial conversations, it's causing the most conflict sometimes in relationships. I've seen where we have one spender and one saver, and I think sometimes that they were attracted to each other for those very reasons, and then you kind of have to embrace that this one's telling you to live your life a little bit and spend a little, and the other one's a saver saying, hey, we have to save a little, so stop spending so much, and you end up with a balance. But sometimes you end up with a lot of arguments and then a divorce. So it's important to talk about these things ahead of time. You're out to dinner. You say, do we put it on a credit card? Do we pay cash? Oh, do you have credit card balances? That kind of thing. What do you feel about buying cars or leasing cars or buying a house and a down payment? And how are you with your savings? And how are you doing with your loans? And do you know how much you spend and that kind of thing? So it's important to have those. But I thought there were some really good tips to have family talks around money. And they gave some guidance, for example, getting a pet or buying a car or moving to a new home and paying bills. So getting a pet is a great way to do that from a very young age. You could have a child who says, you know, I want a dog, I want a dog, I want a dog. And then you have to say, well, if we have a dog, here are the things that we have to be aware of. We have to buy dog food. We have to buy dog treats or dog blankets or dog beds or a leash. Maybe we have to put a fence, an invisible fence in our yard, or a real fence in our yard. Those all cost money. And what does that mean? And it might mean that you don't get that toy that you want, or you don't get that, you know, that Disney trip that you want. So that's how we start those conversations. I remember saying to my own children, we were in the store going through, and they'd want, you know, everything that had that, you know, marketing characters on the packages. And I'd said, those characters aren't in that box of macaroni. It's just a picture. So I'm not going to buy that. It's marketing. They're tricking you. And, you know, the kids, I think, learn from that as well. So I hope we had some tips tonight for you. If you have children, if you're thinking about having children, some income, tax considerations, and just be aware and do some planning, see if it helps you qualify for things that you might otherwise not have, and to be aware of what you might be entitled to. As I mentioned, government websites next week to help you with your financial education. And thank you, Kyle, for being here. Thank you, Shandi, for being here. And thank you so much, listeners, for calling in. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.